Bantam Doubleday Dell Audio Publishing presents The Kiss by Danielle Steele. Read for you by Joseph Saravo. Isabel Forrester stood looking down at the garden from her bedroom window. It was the house she and Gordon had lived in for the past 20 years. She was a model and had fallen down a flight of marble stairs at a shoot and gotten a tremendous head injury. She had vertigo from her head injury and sometimes fell with no warning. She had never been quite right after her coma. The life she led with Gordon was certainly not the marriage she'd envisioned or hoped for, but it was something she accepted now. She had long since learned to live without her husband's love or affection. Gordon had always been cool and businesslike by nature. He was said to be ruthless in business and not a warm person in any aspect of his life. He had established early on in their marriage that he made the rules and he was free to do what he wanted. It startled her that her husband was so distant and so cool. Isabel could no longer even remember the last time they had touched or kissed or made love, as much from the trauma as from the anesthetic and the drugs. Isabel's head injury was a factor, too, but it was not nearly as severe as her internal injuries. She so seldom went anywhere anymore. The opportunities were so rare. And now that she had a chance to go, she felt guilty about it. She had always been a little odd and had finally become severely disturbed. All she wanted was to sleep and lie down by the side of the road. With any luck at all, she thought, she was truly going to die. She didn't eat, she didn't sleep, she said very little. For Isabel, the days were endless. There was no beginning, no end, no part of the day that offered any relief. By the time Isabel met Bill Robinson, she had long since abandoned her friends, her own pursuits, and any semblance of a life of her own. Isabel and Bill had met 4 years before at a reception given by the American ambassador to France. She spoke English impeccably, and she was utterly enchanting. Bill was in politics and was known to be one of the most powerful men in Washington and probably the wealthiest. Humiliation, failure, and disappointment were of no interest to him. He was brilliant, intelligent, polite, considerate, educated, financially sound. He had inherited a vast, almost immeasurable fortune. And he was covered with stitches and cuts and small lacerations and bruises. He did calisthenics as best he could from his chair. For a variety of reasons, he wanted the past 2 months to have never happened. He was sensitive and polite and intelligent. He had been badly damaged at birth, and as a result, his lungs had not developed properly, which in turn had weakened his heart. His spirit was indomitable. He had that all-American boyish quality that had always attracted women to him. He seemed like a nice man. His lungs were inadequate, and his entire system was slowly deteriorating. He seemed so competent and so powerful in her eyes, and in many ways impressive. The hours she spent talking to Bill opened the windows to a broader, richer world. They were like a breath of fresh air to Isabel, and a lifeline she clung to on dark nights. The moments they shared transcended their daily realities. Isabel was chatty and informative. He liked her honesty and style. Bill brought her a new view of the world. And once in a while, in spite of himself, he spoke of his wife and 2 daughters. "My daughters are coming to see me. They're coming up from school." Sophie was staying with friends at a rented house in Sintra. She was going to be a junior at Georgetown University in the fall, majoring in foreign policy. Cynthia, his wife, had come to hate the political world. She had had a facelift the year before, and he knew that she had been having discreet affairs for years. It had been her revenge for a single indiscretion he'd committed 10 years before. "She's probably the most selfish, manipulative, calculating woman on the planet." The walls she had erected between them were beyond scaling, and it no longer occurred to him to try. Bill found it impossible to understand, and inhuman of Gordon to desert his wife emotionally. He had suddenly put up walls to keep her out. It drove Bill crazy to hear what she was going through, but he was helpless to do anything about it. It seemed so incredibly unfair to him. She deserved so much more. If nothing else, Bill Robinson was the consummate good sport and a good man. Don't let Gordon get the upper hand. Save your ammunition, and if he tortures you, use it on him. Much to Isabel's horror, the feelings Bill and Isabel had expressed toward each other over the years were officially never more than friendship. There was no artifice between them, no awkwardness, nothing uncomfortable or strange. "Hello, Isabel. It's me, Bill. You've got to wake up now. You've been asleep for long enough. I love dancing with you, Isabel. If you wake up, we can go dancing again someday. You have to open your eyes, my love. It's time to wake up." As Bill and Isabel grew even closer to each other emotionally, time seemed to move at an ever faster speed. They spoke on the phone frequently, and Isabel wrote him long philosophical letters, particularly on the nights she spent awake. "But whatever happens, I wanted you to know, I'm going to love you for the rest of my life. I'm going to have terrible withdrawal after this week." Bill washed his face and hands, shaved quickly as he thought about seeing Isabel. He knocked on the door, and the wait seemed interminable, and then she opened it and stood there looking at him for a moment with a shy smile. It was hard to believe she had a care in the world. Her clothes were neatly hung in the closet, and there was a collection of pamphlets and brochures from museums and art galleries sitting on the desk. It was Isabel who spoke first. Her voice was husky and soft. "I'm happy to see you, Bill," she said in heavily British-accented French. "What's going on?" he asked as he strode into the room. She smiled shyly then, and there was a moment's pause. They were well-dressed and elegant, and there was something enormously charismatic about both of them. "How are you?" she asked. For a moment, she sounded very French, and he felt suddenly very young. He wished he could stroke her hair. "Would you like some pain medication, Mr. Robinson?" she asked as he looked at her. He didn't want to frighten her, and he had no desire to jeopardize her reputation or put her in an awkward spot. But he felt that the fact that she had come this far was a hopeful sign, the only one they had. "No, I'm fine. I start therapy and rehab in earnest in 3 weeks." He was going to the rehab center with the most rigorous program because he thought they might get the best results. She smiled at him, and for a moment he avoided her eyes. But he thought they deserved some small chance for happiness, at least, and a reward for the agony they'd survived. "I think Gordon is a lot colder than Cynthia. As long as I don't make a fool of her, publicly at least, I think she figures what I do is my business," he said honestly. And Isabel didn't disagree with him. He was severely depressed, but he knew it could have been worse, although in great part, Isabel was all too willing to blame herself. And she couldn't help asking herself if there were things about her parents she didn't know. "I think I've been a great disappointment to him." "I don't see how you could disappoint anyone, Isabel. I've never known anyone to try so hard to extend themselves as much as you do, in every possible way." "That strikes me as sad somehow," Isabel said, looking at him. "I've never heard you talk like this before," Bill said as he put his hand over hers. "I'm looking at you, Isabel, and I want you to look at me." She had never before been willing to admit to him or herself how deeply unhappy she was. And Bill knew her so well, she knew she could trust him with her most private thoughts. "That's terrible. Not only do you want me drunk, you want me fat." It was a hard thing to say and to live with, but for her it was true. She looked amused and surprised as she popped a small chocolate truffle into her mouth with a menacing look. "That's one. And here's one more," he said, handing her another chocolate. "How can you even think of eating again after all this? I won't be able to eat for a week, depending on my liver, my head, and my heart." She ended the question on a sob, and he hated what he was saying to her, but it was time. And suddenly, she knew she didn't want him to die. "You've had a long day," she said, and smiled, and then looked at him with 1,000 questions in her eyes. She knew he had the answers she did not. She smiled at him. Then Isabel said, "I have a terrible thing to ask of you. I wanted to know if... Actually, what I was thinking was... Can I talk you into a basketball game at 8 o'clock? She cut right to the chase. There was a long pause as Bill absorbed the full weight of what she'd just said.
A basketball game? Are you kidding? You could use me as the ball,
he answered her honestly, and she looked surprised.
He didn't sound enthused by the idea, but he did sound concerned. There was an endless silence while she absorbed what he had just said to her.
Are you serious?
Isabel sounded stunned. Isabel, don't look for things that will hurt you. Life is painful enough. Why are you asking me this? Isabel felt utterly stupid.
Oh, how stupid of me, she said.
They passed on to other subjects then, and they both calmed down. I know what I'm talking about, he said stubbornly. They both knew he was only kidding, and after she'd blown her nose, she thanked him with a teary smile. She was suddenly terrified that this was the moment she had always feared. He changed the subject then, and they talked about what a nice holiday they'd had, just like old times, only better, actually.
You don't know what you're talking about.
They sat and talked for hours. Isabel felt oddly depressed. I'm so sorry about what happened. Gordon had never thanked her for the efforts she made. Why do you let him treat you that way? He demonstrates indifference and rejection and meanness constantly.
But it's different for a man.
It's not different for a man. My parents hated kids and had decided not to have any, and then I came along in their 40s as a surprise, and they both died in a plane crash when I was 25. She smiled sadly and shook her head. It seemed right for him, and she loved him enough to want the best for him.
It's a wonder you're as sane as you are, Isabel said sympathetically.
It was a hard thing to say and to live with, but for her it was true. He looked surprised. She had never said it as directly before, and he couldn't help wondering why she was saying it now.
It only hurt in the beginning, she told him. But I want you to be happy.
Be happy.
I'm fine. I'm not sure. I just wonder sometimes if we're wasting our lives.
He sounded so agonizingly familiar to her. It had been a moment of comfort in a terribly lonely time for him, more than she knew or he even understood, and he was looking down at her with a warm smile as an explosion seemed to go off in their faces. As far as he was concerned, the door to his life as a man was closed. He sounded very down, and her heart went out to him. She was trying to be polite, but she wanted to scream. She began to cry long, racking sobs. They talked for hours, and Isabel had a sense that she wanted to stop time and turn back the clock. But he could hear in her voice that she was unhappy and stressed. All she could do was nod as tears filled her eyes. He smiled at her nostalgically for what seemed like an eternity, and then reached out and touched her hand. What time do you want to get started in the morning? He asked her, wishing, in spite of himself, that he could spend the night with her. He was remarkably sure of what he felt for his wife, or didn't, and what he was afraid to let himself feel for Isabel. He had abandoned all thought of a physical relationship with Isabel for the time being, and maybe forever. He knew it was out of the question, and would never have jeopardized their friendship by asking her, or doing something she might regret. He knew how proper she was. And then ever so slowly, with his eyes closed, he frowned, and his lips parted as he ran his tongue around his parched lips. He felt raw fear slowing him down, and he felt not only foolish, but insane. She felt quiet and sad and free, in a way. Don't make it so complicated. It isn't, Bill asked plaintively, in full possession of his verbal capacities again, and obviously upset.
I love you. That's all that matters. And however much you love me, that's enough for me.
We're both living with people who make us unhappy, and when we're together, it feels so right.
Why can't you just let us have what we deserve and want? For God's sake, be sensible.
She nodded and smiled at him, but when she did, there were tears in her eyes. It was all interesting information, but not entirely what Isabel wanted to hear. She had a right to choose her own fate, and this time, maybe even his.
That's pathetic. I can't believe you think that way.
She knew she had to let Bill go.
You're the dearest friend I have in the world, and I love you for it. You know that. Don't let's spoil it by wanting more than we can have.
It seems such a stupid thing to do now, at our age, after all these years. There was nothing left for her to do. It was time to go. I had a wonderful afternoon, she said, and then stood on tiptoe to kiss his cheek. You're very good to me, Mr. Robinson. Thank you, Bill, she said solemnly, and he smiled. Bill's spirits took a hard hit. He didn't ask her if she would be back again. It seemed inappropriate, since neither of them knew yet if Isabel would live. He looked depressed, and was. How is this possible? Are you sure? He asked solicitously. Yes, she whispered to him as her eyes closed again. He turned to her with an odd expression. If you breathe a word of this, I'll put you back in a coma myself, he said softly. Isabel thought he sounded terrible. She had the impression he was angry at her, and she had no idea what she'd done to bring it on. She felt like a total fool. But she felt as though she'd been dropped down an abyss where there was no sunshine, no light. Really? Isabel asked with dangerously glittering eyes. I'll tell you one thing, Bill Robinson. Your timing stinks. You don't frighten me at all. You're not going to skate out of here on rollerblades, Bill. Don't expect too much. Your wife doesn't care if you live or die. You're insane! Get out of my house! He barked at her. He was shaking with fury. She walked resolutely to the door, stopped, took a last look at him, and smiling through her tears, she left. He was not about to accept even a hint of reproach. Are you insane? I don't hate her. She's my wife. 2 days later, on Tuesday, Cynthia came to have dinner with him. Cynthia sat down across from him in a chair and looked as though someone had slapped her, hard. The impact this time was to her soul. She watched him carefully and then checked his eyes. But Cynthia had a lot to think about. How's it going, babe? Cynthia asked, looking cheerful and fresh. She looked pretty and young and fresh and, as always, very chic. Oh, my God, he said. He sounded hoarse, but he was able to speak clearly now. What's going on? She asked. To him, she seemed like an almost unrecognizable hunk of flesh. He said nothing and did not approach. It had been a huge effort for him as he stared at his wife, as though he wanted to slap her, but didn't dare. They were both so willing to settle for what they had, and at such a high price to themselves. He had no desire to see his wife or talk to her. He looked at her almost with curiosity and asked her a strange question. What are you going to do now? I don't know, Cynthia said with a sigh. Confrontation wasn't her style. She sounded young and stubborn, and he looked irritated and displeased. It was the first argument they'd ever had. She could see that he was anxious and tense. Hi, baby, she whispered as she stood next to him. It's me, Cynthia, Cynthia said, with tears pouring down her face. It was the first time she had dared to speak to him like that, and he was not pleased. I don't know what's wrong with you, he said, looking more annoyed than concerned. That's a mean thing to say, Cynthia said, looking hurt. You must think I have absolutely no heart at all. No, baby, I know you have a heart, he smiled sadly at her. It just hasn't been mine in a very long time. We both did a lot of stupid things, she said without expression. I'm well aware of that. And besides, it's a moot point. I don't want to deal with it at all, he said bluntly. He had never spelled it out to her, but she had understood what he meant and thought he was just depressed. Her eyes met his squarely, and he nodded. Cynthia looked at him in pained silence for a long time with tears in her eyes. What am I going to tell people? He asked as Cynthia pulled up a chair and sat down. It hit her like a blow. The whole idea of his divorcing her was so humiliating. She wanted to run away and hide. Cynthia stood up and walked to the window. She was staring into space, looking heartbroken. It's amazing what we do to our lives, isn't it? She said, sounding irritated. I'm not sure. I get tired sometimes of all the reasons I give myself for the way I live. Jesus, I never thought we'd make this one. I'm not even sure I believe my own bullshit anymore, Bill shouted at her. But she didn't seem to be listening to him. And right now, lying to him was far kinder than telling him the truth. What happened to you? She asked. I stopped listening to you about 5 minutes ago, he said honestly. I feel alive for the first time in years, and it's not up to you to tell me what to do. He blinked his eyes as though he wanted to nod at her. I don't know why we've stayed married this long. Sometimes love isn't enough. We could still make it work if we wanted to, Cynthia said. She knew it would complicate everything, but neither of them could stop now. We'll go on a fattening regime together. She smiled at the idea, but she knew how angry it would make her husband. Why were you staring at me? He asked. What kind of human being are you? We both talk about the high price of changing our lives. What about the high price of staying in them as they are? Do you ever think of that? Things are going to go very badly between us. It embarrassed him to discuss it with her, and it was certainly awkward. But there were questions to which he now wanted answers, and this woman was, at the moment at least, his only way to get them. And Cynthia's eyes filled with tears as she looked at him. I see what life could be, and has never been for either of us. How do you feel about it? He asked coolly. I don't know what I feel. Angry, hurt, relieved, avenged, humiliated? I'm not sure, she told Bill honestly. There were suddenly unspoken words hanging thick in the air between them, and his words, so agonizingly formed and at such effort and cost to him, struck Cynthia like a blow. What Bill was saying just didn't make sense to her. She was startled by something she saw in Bill's eyes. It was a look she had never seen there before. He had asked so few questions and sounded so terrifyingly calm, and Cynthia had an eerie feeling. But Cynthia had the impression that he was locked in the same agonizing waiting game she was trapped in. Who are you when it's all over and all you have is your career? He said as something hardened in his eyes. He was prepared to wait all night, if he had to, for an answer. I think we're both fools. In the end, no one's watching. No one cares. No one's going to pin a medal on us one day for being brave. You don't know that, Cynthia said firmly. You're either crazy or blind, and I'm afraid there's been no improvement so far. You know as well as I do that it's not enough. Yes, it does seem odd, she said, looking pensive. She sounded calm, but her eyes said she was anything but, and Cynthia could feel a lump in her own throat. She couldn't even speak for a moment, and she thought she was going to pass out. It shows you that you never know, doesn't it? She said hesitantly. Apparently not, I'm afraid, he said, looking sad. I thought I'd be happy if I could just scratch my nose. That's too bad, she said firmly, hoping to distract him from whatever was bothering him. Have you had dinner yet? People have a right to make their own choices. You can't take that away from them, he said with a look of determination. Can't you just let yourself be happy once in a while and not beat yourself to death? I feel as though life is passing me by. Maybe one of these days I'll toss everything into a hat and give it up, he said, as though the entire matter were unimportant. She didn't comment for a moment, and then looked Bill in the eye again and spoke clearly and firmly so he would know she meant what she said. Think of what you're saying. Don't be crazy. I think you need a drink and a nap. Maybe sedation. She wasn't going to allow him to do anything foolish, even if he wanted to. She was relentless in her pursuit of the truth, and if he could tell her he didn't love her, she would walk away forever. It's all right, Bill, she whispered tenderly. This is only the beginning. No, it's not the beginning, he said angrily. I'd bet my ass it's the end. That's a bet I'd like to take. What bet? He asked her bluntly. Your ass. And she laughed out loud. And then he decided to take a big step. Even if she was furious, he had to say it, because it was what he felt, and it meant too much to him to ignore. There's something I have to tell you. She could feel her heart stop. She knew before he said another word that something was terribly wrong. It's over for us. And actually, I think it's better that way. At some level, we both knew going in that this was how it would wind up. As he said it, she looked as though the bus had just hit her. What do you mean? Exactly what I just said. Let's not talk anymore now. She had never been as shaken by anything in her life. Why did you do this? She was crying as she asked him. What was the point? Just to torture both of us so we can live in darkness and sorrow forever? She suddenly had a sense of her whole life unraveling. I won't have any more affairs. I'll stop, I swear. I'm not involved with anyone now. I want to see you, and I know you want to see me. That's bullshit, and you know it. You'll do it again, Sin. We both know you will. I don't think you can just hop out of bed and run out the door. I'm sure this has been terribly traumatic. That was easy to believe.
If you'll recall, I tolerated a great deal of bad behavior from you last year. If you'd taken the time to be a decent wife, it would never have happened. And I'm not going to put up with any more nonsense from you. They were locked in deadly combat.
She was fighting for her life now, but she wasn't winning with him. She could see that, too.
Everything she had known or loved or cherished or counted on or believed in had come to an end.
All right, you little shit. Go fuck yourself, she said, and then smiled through her tears.
You're a son of a bitch.
You bastard. It was the happiest night of his life.
It had taken another half hour to convince Cynthia to leave. He had dispensed with her, and all he wanted was for her to disappear. It was 11 in the morning by then, and Cynthia felt as though she had been beaten with lead pipes all night. Bill got up the next morning at 6 o'clock. He had half an hour for lunch and barely had time to get to the cafeteria or speak to anyone. But Bill thought he'd never seen so many good-looking men in one place, and most of them half his age. He wasn't worried about it. He didn't consider himself available. He was in love with Isabel. And by 5 o'clock, when he got back to his room, he was so tired he could hardly move. He had had all day to prepare himself for this. It was the hardest decision Bill had ever made, and as he stepped into her room, he had expected to find her looking very ill, but nothing he had imagined had prepared him for this. She seemed even more beautiful to him than she had before. She looked like a Christmas card. "Hi, baby, what are you up to?" he asked cheerfully. There was so much he wanted to say to her.
"Wow,"
Bill said, taking a step back to admire her.
"You look so thin."
"You're incredibly knowledgeable."
"How did you get here?"
Bill asked, looking amazed. "I'm not sure if I fell asleep or passed out, but I feel great today." She was shocked by the condition he was in. His eyes were wild. He was aware of sounds all around him, and far ahead in the distance, there was a bright, shining light. Distracted by it, he stopped talking for a minute. "Hi, sleepyhead.
Are you okay?
How was your trip?"
"Fine. It was all right. I think it will take me a while to feel like myself again."
"Where were you?"
"I was here, waiting for you. You were gone for a long time."
His eyes filled with tears as he looked at her.
"Cynthia's going crazy. We'll figure it out."
"Poor Cynthia, she's had a hell of a shock."
"That didn't bother her?"
Isabel asked, looking surprised.
"I'm sure it did, but she knows better than to make a big fuss.
She has enough secrets in her past."
"Are you doing all right?"
"Better now."
"I share more real life with you, Isabel, than I ever did with Cynthia or the girls. Cynthia and I manage to miss the point with each other completely and wind up feeling alone, even if we're sitting in the same room. You've brought out the best in me. She never did."
"Isabel, I love you so much.
What a good girl you are,"
Bill said, looking fatherly, as though talking about a golf tournament or a tennis match. It was impossible to resist a love like that, that had gone to the edge of death and beyond and back again.
"I'm not so sure, Bill. That's not what love is all about."
She smiled, pensive about what he had just told her. He had freed her for her sake, out of some crazy lunatic idea he had that he owed that to her because he loved her.
"It was crazy of me to come here," he said somberly, already in the clutches of guilt and the throes of his own fears.
For an instant, everything around her faded. "Are you telling me you're going to leave her?" Isabel was stunned. In all the years they had talked to each other, he had always said he'd never break up his marriage, and so had she. But he sounded different now, and it felt strange sitting there talking to him as though nothing had happened.
She no longer felt guilty about what she felt for Bill.
"I want more," he said bluntly. And as he was growing accustomed to doing now, he held her hand.
"Wanting you is driving me insane," he said quietly, as though talking about a golf tournament or a tennis match, and making love to her would only complicate things for both of them.
"To be honest with you, Isabel, when I see you and talk to you, I wonder what the hell we're both doing."
"Oh, Bill, I think we just have to be grateful for what we have."
The two of them were beaming, and Bill was intrigued. "I think you and I have as much right to a good life and a good marriage as anyone else," Bill said pensively.
I can't tell you you're wrong. I can't tell you it will be an easy road. We both know it's not. Isabel was about to grow up. Maybe it was time. He glanced at her at first, and then with a great whoop of glee, he leaped off the bed and ran to her and threw himself into her arms.
This is perfect, Isabel smiled as she sat back in her chair and looked at him.
I just never had the balls.
Well, I'm sorry you do now.
The hair stood up on the back of Isabel's neck. She catapulted into his arms. They just sat looking at each other as Isabel choked on a sob, and then she held him in her arms as he comforted her.
They cried for a long time in each other's arms. They'd been to hell and back, and her children could wait.
Theirs was a bond that defied words and time and years, and the private terrors they had faced together.
Neither of them needed words for what they were feeling. They had come much farther than that.
And it was silently agreed between them that she was not to ask questions or challenge his authority. Bill and Isabel were happy together in every way, and the thought of their being apart now frightened her.
I'm in love with you. I swore to myself I wasn't going to say those words to you. I know it's not fair, but I want you to know.
He was obviously taken with her, and it pleased her no end.
At times, she felt as though they were two people with one soul.
She lifted his hand to her lips then and kissed it, and their eyes met and held for a long time.
You're a very handsome man, Mr. Robinson.
They were crossing barriers they had both respected before and traveling into regions that had been heretofore unknown.
I love you, Bill.
And as she said the words, he put his lips on hers. It was a moment they had both waited a lifetime for, and it brought them closer than they had ever been. And time seemed to melt into space.
I felt you squeeze my hand just then, he said clearly to her.
And she believed him, because she wanted to.
I want you to do it again.
He looked at her with an air of longing, and then smiled, looking like a mischievous little boy.
I want to make love to you.
The only thing missing from their conjugal life was sex. You can't put a man in jail for being in love. She was infinitely careful as she tried to arouse him, careful not to put any weight on him, just enough in the right places. She was running her fingers lazily down his arm, and ever so gently she began kissing him, first on the mouth, and then she worked her way artfully down.
And feeling as though she were taking her life in her hands, her mouth fell open.
It was a blow he hadn't expected, but he didn't look unhappy about it.
For a moment, he was overwhelmed by the blow he knew it must have been for her. She took her own nightgown off as he held her breasts in his hands.
And as it always did now, it gave her a slightly dizzy feeling. She could hardly contain herself. He was gentle but firm. Their kisses were filled with tenderness and passion, and the memory of all they had hoped for, barely tasted and lost too soon.
We have a right to love each other, Bill. She was oddly quiet and composed as she said it,
as she stroked and caressed him, and he looked concerned.
Don't overdo it. You're not up to full speed yet, yourself.
This is the best part, or at least he hoped it would be.
But what if it was not?
I just want to tell you that the best part is what we already have. Loving each other, being together, holding each other.
He quivered at the thought.
It did no harm, in any case, and it raised Bill's spirits noticeably. But he was able to move more than he could before, and he had some vague phantom sensations in his legs. And he looked exhausted and spent, but he refused to give up. Despite her tenderness and her love for him, he felt humiliated and more despondent.
But he understood nothing about the force of her love.
I love you too much to let you destroy your life by being saddled with this, he said, looking grim.
This is as good as it gets, or at least it is for me.
And he felt the exquisite pleasure she intended for him, but the desired effect did not take place, much to his dismay.
Are you planning to give up sex? She asked with a smile. I'm out of my league. I should have just enlisted in the Marines, he answered her honestly, and she looked surprised.
Are you that small? No erection or no ejaculation, or both? She asked matter-of-factly.
It sounds pretty far-fetched to me, he said cautiously. But women have amazing intuition about those things. Something was disconnected in him, and he wasn't sure if it was his brain or his spinal cord. As far as Bill was concerned, he had become a eunuch, and he intended to stay that way.
"It's not your fault," she said as she hugged him close. "I want you to come with me," she said, and then reached back toward him with her hand. And then, as though she were reaching back toward him from another world, Isabel decided to do something totally insane. He was hugging and holding her and pulling at her and kissing her so hard, she thought they would both fall, and she tried to steady him and herself. But after a while, his neck and back began to hurt. For the merest moment, he hesitated, but he couldn't stop himself this time. He held her close to him, with a strong arm around her, and she glided around the floor with him, feeling happier and more at peace than she had in years. With every ounce of his body and soul, he was starving for her. And this time, there was no question about what happened. It was going to be a long night. He was struggling to keep up with her and get her attention now. "Are you coming with me?" She had no idea if he would, but she was going to give it one hell of a try. "I can't keep up with you," he complained, but if he moved his left arm as far as he could touch her fingers with his hand. "Please, Bill, come with me." "You have to come with me," Bill said suddenly, grabbing at her arm. "Do it again, Isabel. Squeeze my hand. Work at it, my darling. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That's it." "I want to come." "Not yet. I was waiting for you."
"That's right.
Thank you, God. You have to hurry up."
"Wait."
"Long."
"Mommy." "Oh, no."
"Wow. That was amazing," she said softly as she clung to him. "I'm a big boy," he said. Tears filled his eyes as he touched her hand, but she could see how depressed he was, and any effort to please him or comfort him or caress or fondle him would only have upset him more. He made a small, muffled sound like a soft groan of pain. It was almost an animal sound, and his eyelids trembled as she touched his fingers. "That was jolly good." Bill let out a small, and then closed his eyes again. "Now we can say we've slept with each other, can't we? Would you like to try that again?" This time there was a sharp groan that clearly meant no. He was exhausted and pale. "How do you feel, sweetheart?" "Are you ill?" she asked, sounding concerned. "I hurt my neck and my back. I'll be fine," he said, smiling at her. Thinking about it, and everything that had happened to him, brought tears to his eyes, and his entire aura warned her not to talk to him. She held her breath, waiting for the other shoe to fall. The hours seemed to drag by after that. It had been a long night and an exhausting uphill fight. It must have been like climbing Everest for him. He just made the first base camp. He felt as though he'd climbed the Alps in the last half hour. It was far worse than she had feared. It was like jumping off the high dive into cement.
"My head hurts. Other things, too," Bill said more firmly then.
"I'm just glad you're alive." It was rapidly determined that both were in need of surgery, he for a spinal cord injury and a fractured neck, and she for a head injury, extensive internal injuries, and the severed artery. She looked tired and pale, and she had spilled something on her T-shirt, but the look in her eyes was sympathetic to him.
"How do you feel, Mr. Robinson?"
she asked politely as he smiled at her, and then tears filled her eyes again. He couldn't stand. His legs just didn't have the strength. Isabel sat staring into space for a long time. The thought of Bill in a wheelchair was unthinkable. It almost gave her a feeling of panic. In some ways, she almost thought, for his sake, he'd be better off if he died. A fractured neck, a spinal cord injury, spinal surgery, possibly permanent paralysis, internal damage, broken bones. It was the worst day of his life. He looked so uncomfortable that she felt sorry for him. Isabel couldn't imagine how he'd survived this long, and she just sat in the hall and cried, and then went back in the room to sit next to him and held his hand. Isabel kissed his cheek and felt how hot and dry it was, until it was bathed by her tears.
I'm not going home and leaving you all alone.
He looked at her then and smiled. Am I going to die? He spat the words at her, and Isabel looked remarkably calm as her eyes met his and held firm. Of course not. But you have to get well now. He seemed so solicitous, but so desperate for her to leave.
I'm not leaving you here, Bill, she said quietly.
You gave me the only real love I've ever had from a man, she said gently.
They sat there in silence next to each other for a while. There was no shame between them, no modesty. They had been through so much. It was as though they had always been together.
She sat in her bed for a long time afterward, pondering what to do next. And at midnight, after thinking about it for hours, the longest 6 hours of her life, she knew what she had to do. She wheeled him into the bathroom an hour later and left him there.
What a sad way to live, Bill commented dryly.
This is Joseph Saravo. We hope you have enjoyed this production of The Kiss by Danielle Steele. This program was produced and directed by Karen Perlman. Production supervisor, Kathleen Hale. Executive producer, Dan Zitt. Text copyright 2001 by Danielle Steele. Production copyright 2001, Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.